What's going on, everybody? Welcome to the program. It is episode 375 of Not Your Average Boston Sports Podcast. I am your host, Garrett Hayden. As always, you can listen to the program on Apple Podcasts and on Spotify, and you can follow along with our social pages on Facebook and X for the latest updates. Good to be back with you folks this week. Obviously, coming to you on Tuesday, the holiday yesterday, but good to be back. Looking forward to this week. I think we got a good week, good episode today. Lots of thoughts to get to. There's assorted Patriots stuff from Vrabel's press conference last week that actually took place the day we recorded last week. So just some things to get to there. Bruins and Celtics, some stuff to get to as well. Maybe kind of a shorter episode as, no Red Sox or Revolution really to get to. But looking forward to it. This week will be good. Got a new guest later this week to talk NFL playoffs. So really looking forward to that. We'll touch on some of the games that happened this weekend later in today's pod. But then obviously we'll get further into that later in the week. So excited for that. Before we get going, want to say thanks to Chris Burns and Ryan McNeil for coming on Guest Friday last week. Really great to be able to talk some college football, give a little preview of the national championship that was played last night. Ohio State the win, 34 to 23. Chris pointed out to me this morning that he almost very nearly correctly predicted the final score of the game. He said 34-24. 34-23 was the final score last night. So kudos to Chris for basically getting that score. So again, great to hear from both of them last week. So yeah, I think we're going to get going talking some Patriots, obviously. We're now a week and a day out from Mike Vrabel's introductory press conference last week. So, obviously, I'm not going to sit here and rehash the whole thing in terms of, it's been a week, but I think it also makes sense to touch on that because I think I do have, some thoughts on that where I think just very clear, I think just from everything that how the press conference went, what Vrabel had to say. And just kind of the feeling that it does seem like there's a lot of positive energy in terms of people being very confident in terms of how quickly this team may be able to turn things around. And I do think that, his vision, the things that he was talking about in terms of prioritizing different parts of the football team, I think specifically in the trenches, offensive and defensive lines, where, that's historically how he's built his teams to be good. And I think that that's exactly what you need to do with this team, I think, to kind of get them back to being, competitive every year. And I know that it's, we don't want to, or I'm not going to expect an overnight turnaround where, okay, they win 11 games next year and, or the, like win the division or something like that. But I do think that given the fact that, Vrabel's teams, I think, typically are well coached, they are well disciplined, and I think just having consistency in both of those areas, I think, is going to make a world of difference with this team. Even though you've heard that, oh, worst roster in the league and this and that, and it's just like, I do kind of think that this is a team that better coached and better prepared. They probably win a couple more games this past season, but not really important to talk about last season. I think it's important to talk about kind of the idea of where this team's going to go and the identity that they're going to try to be, a hard-playing team that takes advantage of other teams' mistakes and, removing the, as Vrabel said, the sense of entitlement from the building, which I think is a good thing because I think it's something that I think, maybe there are certain guys that need a little bit more of a humbling thing and less of a player empowerment type of thing. And I don't mean to say that in a negative way, because I think every coach should be able to empower their players to some extent. But I felt like with Mayo, it was a little bit too much. And it's like you kind of need to balance it out more than just being the nice guy that all the players like. There's got to be a little bit of a there's got to be a little bit of an edge, and I just never felt that with Mayo, and I feel like you can feel that with Mike Vrabel, the way that he speaks, the things that he says. It's like, okay, you can clearly tell that he's not here to mess around. Like, they're here to be a serious football team that competes every single week and, is going to be hard to play against. And I think that's what you need to try to build here. Not saying that, okay, day one or, season one, okay, you got to win, as I said, 11 games and make the playoffs. But I think it's establishing a culture of winning and being like, not like, we're not going to tolerate anything else. So I think I kind of do think this is going to be an off season that I think this team improves a lot. It'd be interesting to see what they do in free agency in the draft, but I got to feel pretty excited about, how the press conference went and kind of just the feeling around the team that I think there's more confidence than maybe there was last season. So, I think just, yeah, a lot of really good things. People were excited about kind of maybe the return back to, serious football. I don't know. I just feel like the last couple of years, it's been hard to take much of, what they do seriously. So I think, kind of moving forward, I'd be curious to see what the Patriots do in terms of the coordinators. Obviously, there have been some, kind of coaching hires. Tommy Rees, who I thought could have been a candidate for the offensive coordinator position, was hired by the Browns to be their offensive coordinator. Obviously, there's all this stuff flying around about Josh McDaniels. Not sure if that's something that's going to be confirmed, whether he'll be the offensive coordinator. I think could be some other names that are floated around. Wes Welker is a name that I think could be, I think would be a name keeping an eye on. I think, his work with Vrabel, or he worked with Vrabel in Houston. Obviously, was in San Francisco, was recently let go by the Dolphins. Could see him coming back. I think that could be a possibility. And I think also some other names, Tim Kelly, who is the offensive coordinator for a year, and Vrabel was the coach in Tennessee. I think that could be a possibility as well. Any other names that come up? Also, it's seen this that the Patriots were bringing back Jeffrey Springer, who is their special teams coordinator this past year. Special teams was pretty, I would say, pretty strong for the Patriots. I think they were a lot better than they were last year. So I think that's something that will happen. And then, I think defensive coordinator, certainly something to keep in mind as well. Not Belichick, geez, that's a Freudian slip. Vrabel was able to bring in, I think, somebody that worked in the front office in Tennessee. Ryan Cowden, who worked with the Titans when Vrabel was there and had recently worked with, I think, the Giants, scout and personnel executive. So I think he's going to be brought into the organization in some kind of front office role. So kind of unclear if, what Elliot Wolf's role is going to be, if that changes. So, definitely, I think keep your eyes open, but I wouldn't be surprised if by, next week's episode, we have a, offensive coordinator for the Patriots and hopefully defensive coordinator. But I think the offseason off to a good start, I think, with the hiring, which I think was the right move all along. And I also think just the sound bites that you got from Mike Vrabel, I think, make you feel really good about where this team is hopefully headed. We don't know. Obviously, a lot's going to have to go right for this team in terms of getting the right pieces in terms of players, but I think just the idea of kind of establishing the identity, I think, is going to go a long way. And, establishing that you want to be a culture about winning. The culture is not just about being nice to the players and nice to the media, which is like kind of, I think, where Mayo kind of went wrong, where it's like, you have to build culture on real things and not just the being the ultimate players coach and being nice to the media. It's like there's got to be a little bit more, and it just felt like there wasn't really anything under the surface. So it's just nice that it seems like there's a change of pace here, where it's just like, okay, kind of just down to business, and that's how it's going to be, which is it should be. Like, you're professionals running a football team. And I kind of agree with the things that Teddy Bruschi was saying on ESPN last week or whenever it was, that they need to remove some people from the decision making who may not really know what they're doing. And not Mayo specifically, but I think some members of the front office that, in my opinion, were too involved in football decisions in the last couple of years, and I think had a large reason to do with why they hadn't been very good in the last couple of years. But that's a conversation for another day. But I'm just hoping that it's the football people that make the football decisions, and we're not getting any meddling from ownership and whatnot. So, hopefully that's what happens. But I think I'm feeling good about, Vrabel and where the team is headed. But obviously a lot to be done for sure with, hiring some new coaches, getting in some new players, rookies and free agents, assuming. So definitely will be an interesting offseason, but we'll keep everybody updated as things continue to happen. So I think we're going to move on. We're going to talk some Bruins. A pretty good win for the Bruins yesterday. I was at the Garden catching the Bruins 6-3 win against the Sharks yesterday. I have to say, a really good performance from a lot of guys on the ice. But I think talking about the team's week, with the three games, I think that, there are, as it kind of is with this team, the positives and the negatives for sure. Okay, there you go. Just trying to look for Matt Patra's statistics, and for some reason I couldn't find it. Found them here. So I think you look at the team's week, coming off the overtime win against the Panthers, a good feeling. I think a feel-good win. I think just getting the win after that particular weekend where there kind of was a lot going on, a lot of noise that, stuff that kind of likely wasn't true. Again, I don't want to touch on the stuff that was talked about in terms of the media, because I don't think any of that was true, but I think it was an important win. And then following it up, I think, with a good win against the Tampa Bay Lightning on Tuesday, 6-2. I thought that, offensively, they were really good. I thought they were really engaged as well. And I thought played a really good, first and third period. I think that the second period left a little bit to be desired, but overall, that was a good win, and it felt like winning those particular games, those two games in a row, particularly, considering how difficult the division is, those were, I think, important wins. Unfortunately, the Bruins were unable to hold a two-goal lead in Ottawa on Saturday and lost in the shootout, so that was, obviously really, really disappointing that they were not able to close that game out. Bruins just not good enough defensively in that game. But I thought that the third period yesterday, the Bruins really imposed their will against a San Jose team that's, yes, one of the worst in the league. And I think it's a team that You should beat, you're supposed to beat. And, I think at this point, like, nobody's really going to give them a lot of credit for winning that game yesterday. I certainly am not going to give them a lot of credit. I mean, I give them credit because being down in the third period could have easily just not been able to finish your chances. And the Bruins did, got the goals from Coyle and then the empty netters to make it look more of a blowout than it actually was. But it's a win's a win. And I think at this point in the season, with the Bruins battling for a playoff spot as they are, you are going to take the 2 points every single time. You're not going to really care what it looks like. And I think especially after Saturday's game, you wanted to come out and have an engaged performance, which I think for the most part it was. Second period definitely had some issues, but third period Bruins were buzzing, were all over it. And I think there were certain guys that played really, really well yesterday, and I think really gave the team a jolt. Clearly with Coyle scoring the 2 goals, Patra with 2 assists in that game, playing on the top line. I think that was really significant to see him and Coyle and Marchand play together, and I think played really, really well. I was also really impressed with Mason Lowry. I thought that was one of his best games as a Bruin yesterday, just all over the place, making plays. And, as Ty Anderson tweeted something about, him needing to be that number one, what was the term was something like he needs to be the power play quarterback on that first unit. And I couldn't agree more. Like, you saw the way that he was really kind of just commanding the zone, a shot first mentality, a guy that was making plays, not hesitating, and just made things happen. And I think for this Bruins power play that's been, bottom of the league pretty much the whole season, you need guys that are going to make plays with no hesitation, getting pucks to the net, moving the puck effectively. And it's just, I don't want to sit here and talk negatively about Charlie McAvoy because he's obviously been a very good player for the Bruins for a while and brings a lot of really good things to the team. He's just not a power play quarterback and just not the guy that should be running that first unit because, for whatever reason, doesn't have the shot first mentality, has a tendency to overpass and overthink things. And it's just, this is a point in the season where every single thing matters. Every single power play is going to be, much bigger. And it's just like, you need guys that are going to make those plays, get pucks to the net, not overthink. And I just, Lowry is really only in this position because McAvoy's hurt and is out and has missed the last 3 games. But I just hope that McAvoy comes back. The Bruins don't go back to just putting McAvoy out there to play on that first unit because I think the way that that unit looked yesterday, scoring a power play goal, great movement on that second power play, had the puck in the zone literally the entire time. It's just, you need more of that. And I think, granted, yes, it's against the Sharks. They're one of the worst teams in the league, but a win's a win. If you're going to get on a run like this team needs to, you need to take those games. So, I think really impressed with Lowry's game yesterday. Had a couple of assists. Really just was all over the ice. So really thought he was good. I do think that this is something I was thinking about last night, that it's not necessarily like, Wotherspoon and Jordan Oesterle are playing outstanding hockey. I wouldn't sit here and say that they've been playing great, but I think it is interesting that the Bruins are, playing them as much as they are, and obviously they need to with Lindholm and McAvoy being out, but just is kind of wild to think about that you really thought for a lot of, this offseason that, okay, Wotherspoon's going to be your seventh guy who'll play, every couple of games in Oesterle, probably AHL depth, that probably won't even play. And it's like, here are these guys being thrust into pretty legitimate roles. And, I think Wotherspoon has had his bumps and bruises, but I think he deserves a lot of credit for, I think, improving his game. It was great to see him scoring his first goal this past week. But I think it's just nice to see those guys getting the opportunities. And obviously, you don't anticipate that someone like Lindholm is going to be hurt and miss 2 months, kind of hoping that he's back soon. The Bruins, I think, could really use a guy of his caliber. And obviously, it'd be great when McAvoy comes back and is healthy. But I think those two guys playing as much as they did, or playing as much as they have, I think is significant. I was really impressed with Patra yesterday. Just makes things happen. Simple as that. And I think it is bothersome that the Bruins have kind of taken this long to bring him back, but it just looks like he is just, ready to be a regular contributor. And it's just like, just makes things so much easier for the guys that he plays with. And I think you could see that immediately. He gets called up on Tuesday, sets up Frederick for that first goal. And it's just like, okay, you can see the patience. You can see the poise with the puck. The kid just makes plays. And just was awesome to see him in the middle of it yesterday, making those plays, assisting on a couple of goals. And just, you give a guy like that an opportunity to play top line minutes. The lines kind of got jumbled up with Frederick being out of the lineup yesterday. But it just was great to see him kind of get that opportunity. I think another guy making the most of an opportunity, Vinny Lettieri, who got called up last week, has scored in back-to-back games. So good to see him get some goals. He was the, I believe, the leading scorer for Providence to this point in the season. So nice to see him get a call up. I think a lot of us would have liked to see a Georgi Mrkalov or Fabian Lysell get the call up, but good for Lettieri, kind of a journeyman, but he scored in his last two games, so I think definitely has earned some staying power. I think we've talked about Oliver Wahlstrom on this program, and I think he's done fine. Had an assist yesterday. I think definitely is a guy that has that offensive ability, but we've not really seen it. We've seen one goal and one assist and about 11 games. And it's just kind of like, I don't dislike him as a player, but I think it's strange that, we're in a position where, talking about the Bruins, like, he's a guy that's played 11 games, goal and an assist. It's strange to me and strange to a lot of people, I think, that he's getting as much rope as he's getting, that we're 11 games in, he scored one goal, and it's like, I don't think I understand why the Bruins are giving chances to guys like that when you have a guy like Lysell who came up and played one game, factored into the first goal of that game, didn't get an assist, but it's just like one game, and that was it, and then he's back down, and it's just like, I would have liked him to get a longer look. And I don't know, maybe that's the plan if the Bruins decide to let somebody like Wahlstrom go, put him on waivers. But it's just like, at a certain point, there needs to be production, and there's not. And it's just like, you are like this particular team in the place that they're in the standings, you do not really have a lot of time to sit here and wonder if a guy like that's going to get it going. And yes, I know you could easily say, okay, well, you could call up Lysell and he could have these same issues, but it's like he was your first round pick 3 years ago. Like, at what point are you going to try to see what he can do? It just bothers me that it's just like, we're not going to give him any rope. We're not going to see what he can do. We're just going to decide that, okay, let's give a chance to Oliver Wahlstrom. And I don't mean to, sit here and talk negatively about him, but it's just like, this wouldn't be a conversation if Wahlstrom has scored like four or five goals in 11 games. And you're like, okay, you gave this guy a chance. He's scoring some goals. He's not scoring any goals. And it's just like, why not just figure out if one of your guys from Providence, a guy that you drafted highly, figure out if he can score? It's just like, you can't just draft a guy based on potential, which they did with Lysell, and just say, okay, we're just not going to find out about your potential. Just doesn't make sense to me. So, hoping that that changes. It's nice to see the team, win 3 out of 4 and be in a position where, okay, the 6-game losing streak is past them. They still are having a lot of issues, but it's just there are good things that are happening. Pastrnak is starting to score more goals. I think that, Morgan Geekie has started to play really good hockey. I think the two of them have developed some really good chemistry. And I think you have Patra back. And I think it makes me feel more positively about their offensive game. Geekie, I think looking at him, particularly when you think about the start that he had, and he's already back, 22 points, 39 points last season. I don't know if he hits that, but it's just like he started to pick it up. You're starting to see some good kind of offensive bounce back from some guys. You hope that Charlie Coyle, who struggled a lot offensively, gets it going, scored twice yesterday, hadn't scored a goal since December. So it's like you hope that you can keep this going. You can get some guys back healthy. Lindholm, is he going to be back soon? I think that you hope that he's back. He's been skating non-contact uniform. So, maybe you hopefully can get him back before the break for the Four Nations. And then, McAvoy, if, maybe he's ready. At some point, Bruins have a back-to-back this week. They're in New Jersey tomorrow. And then they're hosting Ottawa on Thursday, which, hard to believe, but this Ottawa team is in a playoff spot and they're a team that, you're going to be battling the rest of the season. So I think it's going to be a pretty interesting week for this team. And then they got to play Colorado at home on Saturday. So it's like, you got 3 games. You got a New Jersey team that's been really, really good. They're really talented. Go on the road, and you got to play Ottawa and Colorado, pretty talented teams that, Ottawa is playing better than I think a lot of us would have expected. And, Colorado's not a pushover either. So, I think the Bruins continue to have games that I think it's going to be obviously really, really important that they start getting some results. But I think maybe if you read into the 3 out of 4 in the last couple of games and maybe you get some guys back healthy. Who knows? There's still a lot of time Bruins have played. Think 46, 47 games. Still a lot of time. Yes, Tampa Bay has a lot of games in hand, but looking at the standings, the Bruins, I think they get hot. Maybe they could get back in the division race. Who knows? But I think trying to be as positive as you can. With this team that I think is just really just going to be battling it out the rest of the season. I think really, unless there's some kind of big surge, I think that it's going to be pretty much a down to the wire type of thing for this team to possibly make the playoffs or not. We'll see. But I do like that Jeremy Swayman's got some time lately in terms of being that number one guy. I think started 5 games in a row. Korpisalo, I thought, was all right yesterday. I think some defensive breakdowns on a couple goals, but did make a massive save, couple massive saves in the third period that allowed the Bruins to, stay close. There was another, it was a crazy goal mouth scramble where he made a ridiculous save. Pretty sure the game was still tied, but he was big in the moments that he needed to be, and I think that's really all the Bruins can ask for with their goaltending at this point. Like, I do think Swayman's been a little bit better, but yeah, it's a team that they're gonna have to hope that the goaltending continues to play the way that they're playing and the offense continues to score some goals. I think defensively they're having some issues and kind of makes sense, missing Lindholm and McAvoy, but I do think hopefully those guys get back healthy and the Bruins can kind of hopefully get on a run as we get close to the break for the Four Nations tournament. So the Bruins have 9 games. They have 9 games until that break. So here's an opportunity for sure. I'll take a look at the standings later in the program in terms of the Eastern Conference. So we are going to move on. We're going to talk some Celtics with a nice bounce back win yesterday against the Warriors. Always nice to see the Celtics dominate the Warriors, winning 125-85 yesterday. Game that was really not even close, but I think a good win. A good win for the Celtics to be able to cap off a week that's been, pretty mind-bogglingly frustrating, with a couple losses that were really, really frustrating. A couple wins that I thought were good, but I think it's just a team that I think really is struggling through the dog days of the season. We've talked about this the last couple of weeks that, I think for a team like the Celtics, any team really that's, you're sure that you're going to be a playoff team, it kind of can sometimes, it's understandable the season can kind of get a little monotonous, and it's hard to have that same type of fire and intensity literally every night, when you are past Christmas, past the in-season tournament, and you're a couple weeks away from the trade deadline and the All-Star break. So it's like there's really kind of no break or anything in sight. So I think it is difficult for this team to sometimes stay motivated, but I do think a lot of it has to do with, three-point shooting not falling like it was earlier in the season. And I think coupled with some games where the Celtics have played teams that come in and set the tone, instead of the Celtics doing it. And they're still, finding their way with Porzingis being back in the lineup regularly, in the starting lineup. And I think, the continuity is not, it's not as good as it was last season. Porzingis has like missed all that time, and I think they're still working him back into the lineup. I do think that, it's funny, I was watching the game on TNT yesterday, and Shaq was talking about how, what makes Porzingis so dangerous is his ability to mix up being kind of that deep three-point shooter, but also being the guy that you can get the ball to in the paint. And he can score on post-ups. And I think, getting him the ability to do both of those things, makes this team so much better. And I think just continuing to get him starts, get him work with this starting unit, I think things are only going to get better. I don't think that they're going to continually be one of the worst teams, or not one of the worst teams, but it's like their starting unit's not been, wasn't as good. Hasn't been as good this year as it was last year. And I think still trying to work him into the lineup and, make sure that he can be, a complement to Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum, but also kind of being a focal point at the same time, if that makes sense. Because you have three guys in him and the Jays that I think are pretty, can be high volume scorers. And I think it's making sure that you are doing the best you can to be as effective offensively as you can be. So obviously it was a great game yesterday. The Celtics definitely, I think, broke out of a, I don't want to say shooting slump, but I think you look at all the threes they missed against Atlanta, being a big reason why they lost. And they come in and shoot 42% from three yesterday. Porzingis 3 for 7, Derek White 2 for 4, Holiday 2 for 3, Hauser 3 for 6. I think their shots falling. I know that that sounds, obvious, but I think it's like the game gets so much easier for this team when the shots are falling versus when they're not. And I think sometimes they can kind of get stuck being a team that just, launches three after three after three if they're not going down. They shot 29% against the Hawks. Derek White 5 for 16, Jason Tatum 2 for 9, Jaylen Brown 2 for 9. It's just sometimes, yeah, they do try to outshoot their problems, which can be difficult and it can be frustrating. against a team like the Hawks that seemingly always give the Celtics issues. Trae Young's still a really good player. I think it's kind of crazy people that like maybe talk negatively about him still. It's like, no, he's still a really good player and gives the Celtics fits. I did think that the Orlando game, the Celtics did a great job of imposing their will physically, defensively, and I think really making a concerted effort defensively to slow the Magic. So I think, as disappointing as that loss in Toronto was against a team that had won 8 games prior to that game, it was a good bounce back against Orlando. Definitely a second of a back-to-back is tough against the Hawks, especially when they were missing Porzingis, missing Horford, against the Hawks team that has good size and can give the Celtics issues. But I think it was good to see a response against a team like Golden State, first game of a road trip, and a game that just felt easy. A game that felt like the Celtics came in focused and said, okay, we're going to come out and play one of our best games of the season. And it clearly felt that way. So, all the credit in the world to the Celtics for, bouncing back. I think a couple really frustrating losses this week, but I think to start this, or last week, to start this week off, I think with a huge win, I think is going to go a long way. And I think the other really good thing about yesterday's blowout win is the Celtics could afford to play some end of the bench guys and play them, 6, 7, 8 minutes. So the starters and some of the main rotation guys, can rest as the Celtics have a back to back later this week with the Clippers and the Lakers. Obviously, it's nice that there's no travel involved as the Celtics get to stay in LA, but I think really good to be able to get that rest. The Celtics will finish the road trip Saturday in Dallas with a finals rematch against the Magic, or the Mavericks. So that will be a worthwhile game to pay attention to. I think Luka is still out with that injury for Dallas, so may not be at full strength, but anytime the Celtics are playing Kyrie Irving, it's a must watch. So really looking forward to that game. Obviously, it's always exciting when the Celtics play the Lakers as well. Celtics will play the Lakers again in March at the Garden, and the Celtics will play Dallas again in early February at the Garden as well. So very much looking forward to some of those games. But I think good start to the road trip for the Celtics, absolutely. And I think it's kind of just having the confidence that the shooting will kind of come back down to earth. It is funny that it seemed like, and actually there's another interesting thing on the halftime show for TNT yesterday, or it's either halftime or maybe it was during the game. They showed a stat of the Celtics 3-point shooting by month. It had gone down every single month. So it was something like, 42% in October, then it went down to like 39%, then down to 37%, and this month it was like just under 35%. So it's just sometimes it's just the way it goes. I think with this team's offense that is so, kind of dependent on the 3-point shot, whether we like it or not, it's kind of just the way that things are going to go sometimes. But I think the biggest thing is, not letting the shooting splits, affect the team in other ways. And maybe it has a little bit, and maybe it's the shooting splits, maybe it's the fact that it's kind of the dog days of the season and it's kind of hard to find motivation. Now, I know what people are going to say. Oh, well, Oklahoma City and Cleveland are playing great basketball. They're not having any trouble getting motivated. And I think that that's fair. But I also think this is a Celtics team that, is prioritizing being right ahead of the playoffs. And it is kind of funny to think about that, and maybe this is a point that Reggie Miller made yesterday, that the Celtics, made that postseason run last year really without Porzingis. And so it's interesting to kind of think about, like, okay, You want to make sure that he's healthy for the playoffs. And shoot, if you have to go through these, issues now in the middle of January where you're kind of trying to work out the kinks, better to do that than trying to, work that out right before the playoffs or in the playoffs even. So I think as much as it's easy for a lot of us to be upset with the way the Celtics have played lately, and I'll be honest, they haven't played great. I'm not going to sit here and say, oh, the Celtics are fine. Like, there's nothing to be worried about because I have my own concerns about this basketball team. But I think, sometimes it's just the way the ball bounces. And I know that sounds very simple, but I think there's a reason to believe that this team will be okay. And I also think they're a team that's flying under the radar as well. Everybody's focused on Oklahoma City and Cleveland and the teams that are, setting the pace in terms of the record. But here the Celtics are, 30 and 13, kind of, quietly doing fine. Yes, I know that 9-8 record in the last 17 or whatever it is, but I think it's you still should feel pretty good about this particular team that, okay, they're going through issues now, rather than do it now. And I think as Joe Mazzulla has said before, like, gotta kind of have grace for these type of situations. So you can go through stuff like this so you can kind of know what to look for later in the season. And I think it's always good for this team to go through different types of games, whether they're, losses where you have to work out some things or late game execution things that go wrong that you kind of say, okay, this went wrong. How can we try to fix it next time? So I think it's building blocks for this Celtics team at this point, as we get closer to the trade deadline and the All-Star break. But I think good start to the road trip. We'll see how they do in LA and then the finish in Dallas later this week. So we will definitely pay attention to the team's performance. So I think just taking a quick look at their schedule. After the West Coast trip, I think they have a couple home games. I think against Houston. Yeah, Houston and Chicago. And then they're in New Orleans, Philadelphia, Cleveland. So they actually have a game against Cleveland coming up in early February. And then they will host Cleveland at the end of February as well. So, yeah, road trip continues. Tomorrow night, 10:30 start against the Clippers. And just to finish the Bruins thought, Bruins play tomorrow at 7 o'clock in New Jersey. That's their start. So I think we're gonna move on to the other sports. Really, no Red Sox or Revolution to touch on. I think the Revolution are starting their preseason soon. I know that their regular season starts in about a month. Red Sox, no movement on any free agents, but we'll certainly keep you updated as we hear more. So we're now going to move to some NFL notes. Obviously, the divisional playoffs happen this weekend. I'm not going to get too far into these games because I will like to touch on these on Guest Friday later this week. But obviously, Kansas City and Buffalo winning in the AFC. So they will match up in the championship game on Sunday at 6:30. And then at the NFC, the Commanders pulling off the upset in Detroit 45-31. They will be on the road to host the Eagles, who held on to win over the Rams 28-22. So the Eagles will host the Commanders at 3 o'clock in the NFC championship game. So just some notes here. The Bears announcing yesterday that they have hired Ben Johnson to be their new head coach. Obviously, he was the former offensive coordinator for the Lions. So he takes over in Chicago. I think that makes a heck of a lot of sense for the Bears offense that I think didn't perform as well as it should have. So curious to see what we see from Caleb Williams in year two with Ben Johnson. The Colts are hiring former Bengals defensive coordinator Lou Anarumo is their new defensive coordinator. And yeah, gave you the AFC and NFC championship games, which will take place on Sunday. Looking forward to talking about those games with our new guest later this week. So now we'll take a look at some NBA notes. The Pelicans, with a comeback win yesterday, the largest comeback in team history. Also announced that the Thunder head coach Mark Dagnall will coach one of the four teams in the All-Star game. The Wolves' Dante DiVincenzo is out indefinitely with toe injury, and a couple of rookies, Mataz Buzelis from the Bulls and Stephon Castle from the Spurs, will participate in the dunk contest. So we will take a look at some games on the schedule this evening, 7:30 start on TNT. It's the start of Rivals Week in the NBA. So 7:30 on TNT, the Knicks and the Nets, Portland and Miami, Orlando and Toronto also at 7:30, and Philadelphia and Denver at 10 on TNT, and then Washington and Los Angeles, the Lakers at 10:30 tonight. So we'll take a look at the standings. Celtics still well behind the Cavaliers for first place in the East. Cavs are 36 and 6, 6.5 games ahead of the Celtics. The Knicks are in third, 2.5 behind Boston. Bucks are in fourth, followed by the Pacers and the Hawks. And then in the play-in spots, we have the Magic, the Heat, the Pistons, and the Bulls. And the Sixers are 2.5 games out of the final play-in spot, as they have lost six straight games. In the Western Conference, Oklahoma City with a big lead over Houston. Oklahoma City 35 and 7, seven full games ahead of the Rockets for first place. Memphis in third, Denver in fourth, followed by the Clippers and the Lakers. And then in the play-in spots, the Mavericks, Kings, Timberwolves, and Suns, with the Warriors even with the Suns for that last play-in spot. So I think it's probably going to do it for the NBA. Get to some NHL notes here. Connor McDavid was banned three games for a cross-check in a recent game. So we will take a look. Yeah, I'll take a look at some games today. Quite a few of them. Tampa Bay and Montreal, Ottawa and the Rangers, Detroit and Philadelphia, all 7 o'clock starts. 8 o'clock starts, San Jose and Nashville, Carolina and Dallas. 9 o'clock, Washington and Edmonton, and then 10 o'clock, Buffalo and Vancouver, and Florida against Anaheim. So we'll take a look at the standings here. First place in the Atlantic, Toronto with 62 points, followed next by Florida with 57, and Tampa Bay with 53 in the Metropolitan. Washington leading the division and the conference with 67 points. And then you have Carolina in second with 59, New Jersey in third with 58. And then in the wild card spots, you have Ottawa in that first spot with 52 points. Bruins also with 52 points. They're in that second wild card spot with Columbus 1 point back of the Bruins, and Montreal 2 points back. So things are getting a little dicey for the Bruins. They are, yes, just a point behind Tampa Bay, but Tampa Bay does have three games in hand. Ottawa does have two games in hand on the Bruins, so it doesn't look particularly great. But the Bruins are in a playoff spot, which is kind of all that matters at this point. In the West, Winnipeg leads the Central and the entire conference with 65 points, Minnesota in second with 60, and then Dallas with 59. In the Pacific, Vegas leads with 62 points, Edmonton with 61, and the Kings with 55, and then Colorado and Calgary in those final wild card spots, with Vancouver and St. Louis just a point back of that final wild card spot. So a couple free agent deals in baseball as we take a look. Also worth noting, the Hall of Fame announcement will come later today, I think 6 o'clock. So some names that may get a call. Ichiro Suzuki, possible. CC Sabathia as well. So some free agent news here. The Dodgers signing Roky Sasaki, who's the latest Japanese superstar pitcher that's going pro. So the Dodgers making news by signing him. They also sign Tanner Scott, the closer, to a 4-year, $72 million deal. Red Sox, I think, were rumored to be interested, but sometimes they can just be interested but not really get it across the finish line. But yeah, Dodgers just get all the players. I don't know really what's going on, but the Blue Jays coming to terms with Anthony Santander on a 5-year deal worth $92 million. So no news on the Red Sox free agency. See if they make a move for Alex Bregman or somebody like that. Curious to see, but yeah, we'll keep you updated on all the off-season news. So I think it's going to do it for the sports. We're going to get to a new top five this week, as it is pretty cold up here in the Boston area, if you didn't already know that. So woke up this morning and there was a point this morning where it was 2 degrees. So it's a cold one. Let's just say that. And so I figured a good top five to do today, a way to make people feel warm. One of the things that I think everybody likes to do is have some hot soup when it's cold outside. So I figured I could do my top five soups. So pretty much anything is fair game here. I think. Yeah, I don't think I have anything else to preface it, so I'll just go with the number one soup. In my opinion, this might be a bit of a controversial take. I think some people might go the traditional chicken noodle route, but I think tomato soup, I think that's going to be my number one. Obviously, we all know about the unmatched combination with grilled cheese and tomato soup. I mean, there's really nothing quite better than that combination, but I even think tomato soup on its own can be very, very good as well. So I think that's going to be my number one, just edging out the chicken noodle. I know there are a lot of variations of chicken noodle. There's everybody has their kind of homemade recipe. There's the different, like Progresso and Campbell's. But man, something about the tomato soup and grilled cheese, hard for me to not put tomato soup number one. So chicken noodle, definitely number two. Number three might go off the board here and go French onion. Big fan of that flavor. Can't really go wrong with that. In terms of the different ways the onions and the cheeses, I know some people not big onion fans, but I just something about that taste that you absolutely cannot beat. And then there's the crusty bread as well, just makes it all go together. So I think that's number three for me. So now really going to go off the board, going to be very specific with a couple of choices here. There's a specific soup that I'll have all the time. It's Progresso chicken and sausage gumbo. Unbelievable. If you like some spice in your soup like I do, it's definitely got a kick. So I would say that's definitely a contender for me. I'll put that at number four. And then there's also another Progresso soup that I enjoy called, or it's chicken and lemon orzo, which is really, really good as well. Got a nice flavor, got some nice chicken in there, obviously. So I think that's a good number five for me. As far as kind of honorable mentions, I think a lot of people would say clam chowder. Shocker, not really big of a clam chowder fan, so I guess maybe I could put that there. But also, there's not a whole lot of other soups that I've tried. I know that might be surprising to some people, but I think that's really the only soup I could think of. I know there are probably people, yelling right now that, oh my God, I can't believe you're forgetting this one. But yeah, that's all I got. But honestly, if you can think of any other soups that might be good for me to try, definitely, hit me up in the comments to let me know. But I think that's a good top five, and I think it's a good place for us to stop today. Great episode as always, and look forward to a guest Friday later this week. Thank you guys. We'll enjoy that conversation. So we will talk to you then.